We've had 103 Monday night dinners in the last 9 years, and we brought over 10,000 people together in my backyard.
Welcome to the Kindness Podcast. I'm Nicole Phillips. Today, I am talking with photographer and storyteller Adam Schluter. He is the creator of Hello from a Stranger and Monday Night Dinners. Adam has spent more than 8 years traveling the world, inviting people into real face-to-face connection. His work has been featured by National Geographic. He has been on the TEDx stage, and his mission seems pretty simple. He brings people together. He creates space for honesty. And he remembers what community feels like, and he's trying to help us do the same. So, Adam, I am so glad you are here. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. So, first of all, I gotta say this. One of the things, it seems like your pillars, one of your pillars seems to be to remind people what community is. What do we do when we've never, like, we don't even know what it was to start with?
Yeah.
Like, it just feels like that's kind of a big... yeah. Big issue to start with. You travel, really?
Yeah. Well, that's when you remember. Yeah, the simplicity of these things.
Oh, okay. So ways, how did
like,
this?
I say that like we are so wealthy in America that we can afford to isolate ourselves from others. If you go around the world, the large majority of the world is poor. You know, over a billion people live on $1.25 a day around the world. You have to be a part of a community. You have to rely on your neighbors. You have to help them when they need help. Also. In this country, we're rich enough that we can isolate ourselves and then forget about community because we don't actually have to, even though we do emotionally and mentally. But, you know, we don't necessarily, we can just go to a grocery store, get food and come home and close our doors.
Isn't that interesting? We think it's such a privilege to have bank accounts. And yet you're saying there's a massive deficit that happens when we rely on that.
Yeah, of course.
Ooh. So will you tell us first about... the traveling, the taking photographs, because never have I ever thought to myself, oh, I think maybe I'll just stop and take a picture of a random person and then visit with them. That's terrifying.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I didn't like it at all. I'm definitely more, very much on the introverted side. So I didn't like it. But yeah, I mean, you know, in a nutshell, I'd moved. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri originally, and I wanted to live around more nature, but I didn't have any money. This is a long time ago. And I decided to just get in my car and save up. I literally, I was waiting tables at Cracker Barrel at the time. It was my early 20s. Saved up enough money. I found that there's one highway that you could take from St. Louis, the Midwest, that would take you to the ocean. It was Highway 44. And like, and I was like, one road will take you to, what? Like, how much would that cost? And people were like, I don't know, $200, $300. I was like, I can save up that amount of money. And anyway, long story short, I just did that. I lived on the road, lived out of my car for a while. And then I moved down to Mexico. I lived in Mexico for a few years. There's obviously a lot happening between these things. But pretty much like the culmination was when I was graduating from college and my, 21 years old, I was in love with a girl that I knew that it was my high school sweetheart. I knew that I was going to move back to St. Louis. I have a very good, close family. And we're going to get married, have a family, get a house, get a career. This is what everyone does in the Midwest. You know, it's just all the steps. And then nothing wrong. I didn't know anything outside of that. It's what my whole family has done. And there's a moment when we're in college, it's our last year, it might have been our second last year, but we had a lot going on. And there was a moment where we had mutual friends and a mutual friend of mine said, I think this girl, I won't say her name, but I think she's cheating on you. And I was like, there's no way. And this is college, party phase, everything. We're all kind of a mess. And she said, I think I know where she is. I'm going to bring you to this house. And she brought me to this house. And it's just this crazy moment where we opened the door and I saw it. And it wasn't like in the act, but like they were both of them. And the visual component of that with my high school sweetheart, and I already had my whole life planned out, that it just completely broke me. And I had zero identity outside of that relationship. And so really, I had to run. And that's, I just ran. And I ran for years and years and years. And never allowed myself to really be emotionally vulnerable and close to anyone anymore. Because I was so broken and scared and also just trying to heal. And so then I just kind of bounced around for a while, moved down to Mexico, lived in Mexico. I went back home to St. Louis for the holidays, was very emotionally insulated, protected, still not trusting relationships. And I met a girl when I was in St. Louis. We formed a relationship. We fell in love, all the stuff that I did not expect to happen. But long story short, I moved to Coeur d'Alene, where I live now. We moved in this house that I live in now. We were so poor, we didn't even have enough money to afford the first month's rent. This is 10 years ago. And so the people that rented the house initially let us prorate the first month's rent. We had no job. We had never been in this place before. We totally picked at random, didn't know a single person, and started with literally nothing. And we were really excited because we had a roof overhead. But once reality came in and routine came in, some of those things that we were running from came back, and actually got a call that she cheated on me. And it was the same thing. So every reason I had ran from and not trusted relationships, now I found myself back in another relationship. And this is 10 years ago, and the exact same thing happened. And so I was just like, I will never trust another relationship. I will never love again. I will never allow anyone to get close to me again. She moved out. I didn't know a single person. Went in the first winter time in the Northwest. Completely broken and suicidal. And so really, like, all of this came out of literally, I had no path forward. And the only reason I chose the more difficult path is because I have such a great family and I love my mom and I'm so close to my family and I just couldn't do it to them. And so I just thought I'd just come up with an idea that literally terrifies me more than anything else. And again, I was a waiter at a local restaurant. I just saved up a few hundred dollars, enough to be able to get a cheap flight. And that was it. That was the inception of this all. So this came from a very scared, broken place, but really it just was, I had no other choice other than to step into pure vulnerability and try to find a way to feel seen.
So that flight took you where?
To Copenhagen, Denmark. That was the cheapest flight out of Seattle that I could get, which is funny because I opened up Google Maps and it was like, whatever the cheapest flight that'll take me the farthest away. I didn't care. I just had to go. And it turned out that Copenhagen, Denmark is the most expensive city in the entire EU. So I'm all poor. I'm like, oh, I got a cheap flight and I land there and I can't even afford a cup of espresso, but whatever.
Right.
At least I was there. So.
Okay. And you took a camera with you, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. Okay. And had that been a hobby for you for a long time, or was that something like, oh, I think I'll bring a camera along and see what happens?
No, when I was living in Mexico, I had fallen in love with photography, but I never made any money with it. I didn't think that you could make any money with it. But I loved nature photography, but I realized that I loved people photography, but I was just too introverted and scared to actually like do portrait photography. I didn't want to talk to people. I didn't want to like be, you know, close to people.
On your website, Hello from a Stranger, I mean, it's pretty cool. Like you can go through and you can see the portraits you've taken and there's one line or one paragraph or two paragraphs. I mean, one of them just is this picture of this person and it says, my girlfriend just dumped me. And some of them are happy and some of them are sad, but they're all so real. So what does that process look like when you walk up to a person and say, can I take your picture? Just walk me through what might that look like?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's terrifying. It came in kind of two parts. One, this project, when I first started, and I had no plan here. Like, you know, I was just trying to save my life. Literally, I had no social media. Yes. I didn't plan on doing anything with this. This is really a creative, like something rejuvenation, you know, but like, I didn't plan to do anything with this. Really. I had no idea, but it was originally, I thought I'll call it the world I see. And what I'll do is I'll just like photograph the world that I see to try to like show people a more beautiful side of the world that they might not see. And it really was about people, but photographing people from afar. And a lot of it was like, look at how beautiful people sit in like perfect settings that they don't realize that like match their clothes or they match their hair, but they don't realize it. So I was just kind of photographing that. I needed to get way closer to the person to be able to get the photograph I wanted, but then that meant that they would see me. So I didn't like that. But then it got closer and closer where then they would see me and it felt really awkward. It was like, I need to talk to this person or ask them, you know? And then this is over a long period of time, but then I was okay with talking to the person, but just ask for the photograph. And then I had to get away as quick as possible because I didn't want them to really see me. I was too broken. I wasn't ready to feel seen. But I also used the camera to hide behind the camera. I was always hidden behind the camera. So even though finally I got the courage to be able to ask, I was still protected. And as a part of that process, of I knew kind of like to ask for the picture, take the picture, show them, and then leave was a very protected process. But in that, I was just here to try to feel less alone, and none of that helped me feel less alone. So then I really learned that I need to learn how to put this camera away after the picture and engage and talk and be with the person. And so then I thought, well, I'm so scared to do that. I need to say something because I'm awkward and goofy and spontaneous. I don't know what I'm going to say. So I need to say something eloquent, you know, and I need to think of something. And so I thought, oh, I'll say, I'm photographing people all over the world, but only when I see something beautiful, and this is so beautiful, would you mind if I took your photograph? And I was like, oh, that's like a nice eloquent speech and they'll connect. And people hated it. No one would open up to me. And many people actually would reject me. And I'm like, what is going on here? And I realized that, you know, when you approach a stranger in the street, especially in the world, you have a millisecond, or when a stranger is approaching you, you have a millisecond to decide, are they trying to sell me something? Am I safe? Do they want something from me? And if someone gives you a speech, to me, that immediately is like, oh, they want something, or they're selling me something. I don't really have time for that, you know? So like, I realized that by me giving this speech, everyone thought I wanted something when really I didn't. And so then I just realized, no, like, just be vulnerable and speak and talk. And I don't know, I was terrified. And I just learned over many times to just be authentic and talk about what came up, what I felt in that moment. You know, we talk about what they did or where we were or what they loved about the town. But in that, they would meet me in the middle and be vulnerable with me. But I had to be vulnerable first. And so that just kind of sparked this whole project out of that.
So does that same process of just noticing what's around you and going up and saying to someone, wow, this is a beautiful fountain you're sitting by, isn't it? Or whatever, I've never been here before. Does that process that you did while traveling work when you're in your own community?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you need to be new to a place to make that actually happen?
That's a great question. I think authenticity is crucial in any kind of spontaneous, genuine connection, because you don't want to feel like someone's, again, like kind of intuitively, you can feel like if someone's polished or extroverted or has a script, it feels disconnected or a little transactional, you know? So I think a genuine curiosity is always good because it's playful, it's pure, it's present, it's authentic, you know? It also allows the person to kind of share in that with you. So it's like, oh, it's a beautiful fountain. Yes, it's a beautiful fountain. Do you always come here? Is this somewhere that, you know, that you come often? Yeah, I come here when I want to journal. Oh yeah, what a beautiful spot to journal. What do you like to, is there certain stuff that you like to journal about, or is there something today? Just little unique pieces that are more based on the present flow of the conversation rather than that you have like this pitch or script, you know what I mean? But
so if I'm asking you to teach us how to talk to strangers, you are saying to me, if I'm hearing you right, don't overthink it. Just go and just walk up and do it.
Yeah? I would say 1,000,000%. If I learned anything, and I ask people thousands of times over this project, why would you trust me? Why would you open up to me? Why did you talk to me? Why did you connect? Why did you give me your photograph? That's so
personal.
And you realize that. And then once these photographs got really close and really personal, and you know, you can see that in a lot of them, it's like, you didn't even know me. And not only like, did you let me get close to you, but you let me capture you and really capture you and then take that home with me. You don't even know who I am or what I'm going to do with that. And there's such a purity in that. Really, it's all intuitive, but there's such it was clear that I was intuitively demonstrating trust, that they knew they could trust, they could feel it, but I didn't have to ask for it. I didn't have to, because if you say it, kind of it's maybe not genuine, you know what I mean? But it's like, so it's felt or it's not, which means you have to be authentic or nothing, because any disconnect, people will feel that. And time and time and time, I've asked people so many times, and why would you, what I got more than anything was, you were so passionate, you were so excited, you were so just like, eager for this moment, and you saw it. I couldn't say no. Like, how could I say no to that? You know, like, so I had people that I had hundreds of people that would give me their photograph and then they would just leave. And I'd be like, why would you even say yes to the photograph then not ask? And they would say, like, you're just so excited. Like, but they trusted it too. It felt genuine, you know? So always just be authentic and just be willing to be awkward and definitely vulnerable, because for me, when a stranger approaches me, that's the only way that I can connect with them also.
There's some really great research that talks about like emotions being contagious and things like that. And I'm hearing that in that you were able to transfer that. I want to rewind like several minutes in our conversation when you said something that kind of piqued my interest. And that is that you saw beauty in the world. And what strikes me as odd about that is that you were coming from a place of such desperation that you were thinking about taking your own life. And you leave and you go to this new place, carrying all this baggage with you. And yet the lens through which you were looking at the world was one of beauty. It wasn't one, because what people look for is what they'll see, I think. And so why weren't you looking through the lens of people are crap?
Well, I think there's a lot about just awareness, you know, and a lot of that is about allowing yourself to be in new experiences when you really are present and aware. And a lot of that can come through feeling vulnerable in the sense of like safety wise, even. I'm in a new country in a new place where I don't speak the language and I've never been here before and I don't know where I am or what I'm going to do. And so your brain is very present and focused because you have to be. You're, you know, reading your situation, your environment. It's safety, but it's also learning and it's all stuff. So you're fully engaged. So the key of that is you're not in your head. And I found that I was in my darkest, closest to question in life when I'm just ruminating in my depression and my deep thought of set. I'm creating my own narrative and my own, the way that I perceive the world is the way that I'm telling myself the world is, when actually the world is so many things. And if nothing, the world's very beautiful and the world's a very special, unique space or place full of beautiful people. But if you don't see them, then you'll never notice them. And if you don't notice them, then your perception of the world can be false, is false. Mine was, you know, inside my home, I felt like the world's a dangerous place and everyone's just going to hurt me and cheat on me and break my heart. And why would I ever open up? Outside in the world, by actually testing that and, you know, leaving my comfort zone, I just was able to teach myself what the truth is on the beauty and the quality of the world, but through actual experience, not by making it up.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I saw a total transformation in my life as well when I started really looking for the kindness around me. And that helped me, just like you said, get my eyes off of myself and my own depression and put it on to other people. It was a different lens. So I appreciate what you just said about that. And I like
that. How did you find that? I'm curious. In the beginning, like when it was hard to find the kindness.
Yeah. So I, in 2011, had an interaction with a young mom and I saw the way that she showed up in her life, that she got to be there with her toddler. And I had three kids and a much larger support system than she had and more resources. And I felt like I had to be there with my kids. And I just felt this nudge to give her some money. I mean, she didn't ask for it. There was nothing. I don't know. I was like, it's inside, like, give her some money. So I did. And I realized in that moment, like, I had given her enough money to take her kid to McDonald's and fill up her gas tank. And I left there with a high unlike anything I had ever experienced before. And I was self-medicating in all of my favorite ways at the time, right? And I just chased that feeling. I wanted to know if other people felt it. So I chased that feeling. And so that was what started in 2011, the kindness journey for me that then eventually became, you know, what we're doing now with this. Yeah.
That's it.
So
you noticed her.
Yeah.
You noticed that. And then you did something about it. And you taught yourself viscerally through actual experience that is where joy is always in giving and first in noticing and also in giving. My grandma always said, like, you know, in your darkest moments, always find new ways to volunteer. You know, it's like, get out of your head by giving back, by helping others so that we can also feel better within ourselves. And kind of the role and purpose that we find in our darkness, you know.
So you started this amazing program called, I don't even know if I should call it a program. It's a thing, Monday Night Dinners.
Yeah. Yeah.
Project. There you go. Project. Monday night dinners. And one of the things that there's rules. And one of the rules is that everybody brings a dish to pass, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of a side dish. And so when you said, like, grandma said, like, look for ways to volunteer. Yeah. I'm always thinking, like, everyone always has something to give, whether it's mm-hmm. a word of encouragement or, you know, in this case, bring something to pass around mm-hmm. because then it. But why do you have that as one of your rules? And tell us about Monday night dinners, because I just jumped right into that.
Yeah. Well, I love that question. It's a great question. Well, yeah, I mean, the project we started on there was Hello from Stranger. And that ended up being like 16 countries on that first part. And I came back. It saved my life. It taught me that I could ask for help, that I could be vulnerable, that people weren't going to hurt me, that I could be 100% myself, and that people would take care of that. So it healed me in many ways. And then I came back and I realized I feel like my life has changed and I can be a part of the world now, not afraid of it. And then I came back to Coeur d'Alene that I just moved to, remember, and I still didn't know a single person here. So, I like learned all this and saved my life, but I'm still completely alone in this new town that I just moved to. And so as a natural extension of that, it was like, well, I know what to do about it, even though I don't really like this, because I'd rather, be safe and comfortable, but also that's where my depression will find me again. And so I need to find a way to be out there and be a part of the world. And so I just thought, I'd grown up with a close family, like I said, and my mom, who's just the most amazing human in my entire life, and from my grandma, which is her mom too. And she, when we were moving out of the house, she said, every Monday, just do me this. Every Monday, we all live in St. Louis, just we're going to have dinner together. No reasons, no rules. I'm going to cook. We're going to have lots of wine and laugh and talk. And we're just going to share connecting and stay physically close to each other. So every Monday for the last 30 years, my mom is still doing Monday night dinners. And so she still does. And she had one last night and she'll have them forever. And they've kept her family so close. And we bring in new strangers and new people. And this is all inspired by my mom in St. Louis. And my parents are still together. My dad's a crazy cat and he's where I get the extroversion, a little parts of that. But so them two together. But so when I came out of Coeur d'Alene, didn't know a single person, I was like, well, I know how to leave my comfort zone, even though I don't want to. And I know how to create genuine connection. But inspired by my mom, what if I invited those people at the end? Because these conversations were still, they might be, you know, a few hours or something, but it's still we left and then I'd leave the country. And then right. None of the people I met would connect with each other. And then I felt like, you know, I'd still stay fragmented. So anyways, I just thought, what if at the end of every genuine conversation, I'd invite them to have dinner at my house and I would do a Monday night dinner here. And so that was the whole idea. And I mean, I was talking to most random, I mean, grocery tellers and bank tellers and people on the sidewalk. And I was such a goofy, awkward guy that I was the guy that I really meant it, you know, hey, at the end, come back and have dinner at my home. And it was so crazy. This is 9 years ago. So crazy that I legitimately didn't think a single person would show up because right. they didn't know me and there was no Monday night dinner and there was no project or anything, you know. And 11 people came to the first dinner and it was so crazy because I was still very poor. A broken picnic table and we didn't even have food. We ran across and got mac and cheese and I burnt it all. And we had water and burnt mac and cheese, but no one cared. Everyone was just so thankful to be together with new people. And like, we sat around this picnic table and everyone, or this folding table, and everybody, all 11 people said, I need this so bad. You have no idea how much I need this. And I was like, I am dying here. Like, I need this so bad. So if you need this and I need this, then like, let's just continue. And this is pre-COVID. This is pre all the stuff where it's like, we still kind of knew this, you know, but so we've done it every 2 weeks for the last 9 years. And, we used to do them all year long because the winter is when people need them a lot, but they've gotten so big that we only do them May to October now. But we've had 103 Monday night dinners in the last 9 years, and we brought over 10,000 people together in my backyard still in the last 9 years, physically together. And everyone brings a side dish. And what was cool was we had this moment where we had done them for, I don't know, maybe a year. And, I know it was like maybe 18 or 19 or something like that, Monday night dinners. And they're all about, this is nothing special, right? This is just about holding space and about just coming together and having a meal. There's no, you know, like agenda here. And we had this final night where Or we had this night where we would all sit around the fire. They're real small. And we would all just talk at the end of the night and connect. And one of our friends that had come to a bunch of them, his name was Justin Red. We were sitting around the fire. We had all had dinner together. We were sitting around the fire. There's no music. This was very early days. And we're talking and all this stuff. And Justin gets up at the end and he goes to walk to the back of back of my house. And he stands in this back of my house and he turns and he looks at me and he says, "Hey, Adam," he goes, "don't ever stop loving." And I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Don't ever stop loving." And I was like, I'm never going to stop loving. You know that, dude. And I give him this big hug. And my friend Jack said, "Hey, dude, go home with Justin." They were friends too. And I said, "Just like check on him." I don't know what that was about, check on him. And Jack did. He brought him home and everything. And that night, Justin took his life. And it was so crazy because I was like, we had just spent this whole night together where everyone knows you can ask for help and everyone knows you can tell people I'm really struggling or I'm in a dark place or my mental health. That's what we're all doing this for. That it was so jarring and just heartbreaking. And I'd been through a lot of suicides with friends before, and the suicides have always broken up our friend groups because we couldn't deal with the grief. You know, we couldn't talk about it. And I was just like, no, like it broke up our community. It was so hard. And I was like, we are just going to double down on this. Like, that's what this is about. And we're not going to let this break us apart. Like, we're going to hold more space. And now we have a deeper intention behind really listening and also paying attention. Maybe do we miss something? Obviously, we're not going to, you know, hold ourselves guilty here, but like, do we miss something of just paying attention? And so the very next Monday night dinner, we decided to bring in live music as a celebration for Justin and donate 100% of the money back to the foundation and community. And then we noticed the live music allowed more people to show up that were more introverted, that were didn't want to just walk in a conversation or connection. And then we had a deeper mission behind it about holding space, about asking for help, about sharing in life with each other. And so that's where the dinners really started building and building a lot since then.
Thank you for sharing all that. Wow, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah,
so this has continued to grow, to gain some attention now. Can you talk about that a little bit? That there's now, I mean, there's a video about it people can watch. There's like what's the projection of this?
I mean, the projection is just to help as much as possible, you know, and thankfully, we need this more than ever. So I'm just grateful to be one person in the world just trying to hold space. And it's so many more people than me, which is the beautiful part. You were saying about the side dishes. What we found is like, that's the most important part because these dinners, as they grew, you know, we've never made a penny with them. We donate 100% back to the community. We don't make any money. We lose a ton of money with this. And that's fine. Like, that's not the point. But it's always had to be, I've always wanted it to be, and it has to be everybody's thing. It can never be Adam's thing or Adam's community event or Adam's backyard or Adam's party or Adam's whatever. Because I can't afford to do it by myself and I can't do it. And it's, you know. And so by me saying everyone has to bring a side dish, that means you need to actually take some time out of your day on whatever it is to put something together to bring to contribute that our community will be able to, you know, feed each other off of. And so what's really beautiful about that is it is everybody's thing, but everyone has to actually put some intention and time and heart into what they do. And then you find so many people that get so much purpose out of bringing a recipe or bringing something that they want to share with other people. And then they get so much purpose out of watching people eat it or share it or talk about it or, you know, goes through whatever. And so that's always kept it very foundational that it's everybody's thing that you need to physically be a part of for this to be able to continue. So as a part of that, volunteers started coming together and now we have just an incredible group of volunteers. But as a part of that also, those volunteers now help other people start their own Monday night dinners. So that's really the trajectory projection with them now is helping so many other people start their own Monday night dinners, which we have tons of people that reach out, but we haven't had the infrastructure to be able to help with, you know, because it's and exactly how to do it and have a template for it, but also to make it your own thing. And so now we're helping people start all Monday night dinners around the United States. We're starting about 2 a week physically. And then we expect there to be, who knows, but our estimate is about 80 to 100 Monday night dinners around the world in the next 12 months. And then as the show is a part of that, we're pitching the show on Monday night dinners. And the show also is just to show people and teach people how to do it themselves.
What's the show? Say more about that.
Yeah, we have a show on Hello From Stranger. And that's really just my personal journey on what everything that we've talked about here and why I do what I do. But really, I hate to be in front of the camera. I really don't like it at all. And we actually developed a show with me never being in front of the camera, which is like my safety little comfort zone. And then we pitched it to National Geographic and they said, hey, great. Yeah, we like this, but only if it's about you. And I was like, no, I hate that. Like, cause I don't like social media. I don't like the feeling of that, you know, and there's a lot of imposter syndrome, obviously. And they're like, yeah, but if it's not about you, then there's no central theme to build a show off of. There's no like replicability, you know, and like it's stranger stories, but like there's no theme to that. And so they made me make the show about me. So we learned how to do that over the last like 5 years. So we're pitching a show on Hello From Strangers, just me going through my lens of how I see the world and have genuine conversations with strangers. And then the show is then about the strangers that we naturally, spontaneously meet in the world. No one's ever heard of me. Thankfully, no one knows who I am. These are all spontaneous interactions that people I just say hello to, but really just trying to show people how anyone can do what I do. That's really the only goal of that. No matter how awkward or goofy you are, it's just about leaving your comfort zone. And then the Monday night dinners have evolved to now, with that, inviting all the strangers that I meet in each new country or place to have dinner with me. But it's a way so that I can connect all the strangers I meet with each other so that each community, city, country is hopefully more connected because they form relationships and share phone numbers and emails, and then we leave and then they continue that from there. And then as we do that, we're also teaching people how to start their own and then giving it to them and then leaving so they have that on their own.
Man, what a great, great project. Super cool.
Nice to know. It's very simple, I think. Very simple.
Yeah. Those are some of the best ideas, right?
Yeah.
because they can take off. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So during the Kindness Podcast, we always have like a big question. And my big question for you was, what does kindness look like when we're trying to connect in a world that feels disconnected? Is there any other way to answer that than how you've answered it that you want to add in as an answer to that question?
Can you say that one more time? The question of it?
Sure. What does kindness look like when we're trying to connect in a world that can feel disconnected?
Mm. Beautiful. Kindness in that definition, in my sense, is just empathy. It's, you know, not looking for those divides, but maybe looking at those divides as points of connection also. So if you can have general empathy that everyone's doing their best, hopefully, and everyone's trying their best, and everyone really does want to love and not feel alone. People do want to have friendships and meaningful relationships. But in a lot of ways, we can form these identities that are rigid and this is who I am. And it's like, that's beautiful. There's nothing wrong with that. But who are you behind that is a beautiful thing. You know, it's like, who are you also? Like, I love that you're, you know, a podcaster and, you know, you're a mother and all that stuff. And that's beautiful, you know, and I would love to know why those things are special to you rather than me trying, you know, those should be points of connection for me to understand you better, more authentically, because there's a deep personal story behind those, rather than me telling you this is who I am and you tell me this is who I am, and then we walk away not knowing anything past that. So I think for me, that all comes down to face-to-face connection and communication. We really need eye contact and time together. Digitally, it's very easy to say, this is who I am, this is who I've been, this is what I do. And because it's more, you know, it's more just the presentation side of things. But in person, you have that space and time. And it's like this, I'm a podcaster. It's like, that's so beautiful. But now I can ask questions about that. And now I can get to know you behind that. So I think kindness just comes down to empathy and understanding and shared time.
I have one final question for you. And that is, your sweatshirt says, don't let this darkness fool you. Tell me what that means to you.
Mm. I mean, that's a reminder to myself 100% that, you know, I have been in the depths of my mental health and depression close enough to the darkness that I believed that that was the only thing that was real. And I only understood that it was not real by leaving my comfort zone and actually giving myself the chance to test and to allow the world to love me and allow the world to be there for me. But all of that, I had to leave my comfort zone and ask for it first, to be vulnerable with them. And so it can be an automatic thing for me to fall back into depression or, you know, get in my head. But it's always a reminder that it's just your brain fooling you in many ways. And if you want to see the truth, go outside and talk to a stranger. It's that easy.
Ah, I love it. I'm hugging you right now through this computer. Okay. Yeah. The website is called hellofromastranger.com. Please go there. Thank you, Adam, for reminding us about empathy. That connection doesn't have to be complicated. Just go do it. Choose to look somebody in the eye. Listen fully. Make room for the human in front of us. Mm. And understand that they're walking through something that they feel vulnerable about too.
Thanks, yeah, and I'm Adam. Sorry to say it, but and just in closing, but it is on you. We have to be the one to say hello first. Almost the majority. We can't always wait for it to come to us. We have to be vulnerable many times first.
Yes. Mm. Such a good point. Such a good point. Make the first move. Well, if this conversation made you think of someone who might need a little encouragement or might want to start a Monday night dinner for themselves, or if you want to, that would be amazing. But if you thought of somebody else, would you please send this podcast to them? And remember, what we look for is what we'll see. Bye, everybody.